Greetings. This is Alternative Perspectives, and you are listening to WRG 89.3 FM, your station for progressive information. Produced by Betty Couvertier and contributions by Andre Holmes, Dion Bates, LaCara Foster, and Ghetto Gospel. Alternative Perspectives is the voice of the GLBTQI community and our allies. The focus being the issues that affect the GLBTQI community, social, economic, religious, and political, to educate and inform about the lives of the gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender, intersex, and queer, and questioning community, and find the common humanity that connects us all. Opinions expressed on WRFG do not necessarily represent the opinions of Radio Free Georgia Broadcasting Foundation, Inc., its staff, or volunteers.
Sit back, relax. Alternative Perspective starts right now.
And we have Sovo on the line. Diana, you there?
Hey there.
Hey, how you doing tonight?
I'm great.
Good, good. What you got for us?
All right, I'm Diana Bagby, and here are some of Sovo's headlines. The Human Rights Campaign's 21st Annual Atlanta Dinner will be held May 3rd at the Hyatt Regency Hotel in downtown. Organizers estimate 1,100 people will attend the annual dinner event. Actress and gay activist Kathy Najimy will be the evening's keynote speaker. U.S. Representative John Lewis will also be on hand to give a speech. Atlanta's HRC chapter will also honor local heroes during the dinner. The Dan Bradley Humanitarian Award will go to Pastor Dennis Meredith of Tabernacle Baptist Church. And Frank Bragg, Director of Communication at Metrotainment Cafes, will receive the Leon Allen and Winston Johnson Community Leadership Award. The evening will also feature a performance by Crystal Waters and after-dinner entertainment of casino gambling. Also, a group of transgender activists and allies plan to protest the Atlanta HRC dinner by gathering at the Hyatt Regency at 6 p.m. The protest stems from debate in the U.S. House of Representatives last fall over the Employment Non-Discrimination Act. After years of covering just sexual orientation, ENDA was introduced last year with gender identity as well. But the category was dropped when the bill's main backer, openly gay U.S. Representative Barney Frank, said there were not enough votes to pass the broader measure. The U.S. House approved ENDA with just sexual orientation in November 2007. The Senate has yet to vote on the measure. Because HRC urged lawmakers to vote for Frank's version of ENDA, trans activists want to voice their opposition to the national group's tactics. Gay and gay-supportive students from more than 100 schools in Georgia participated in the National Day of Silence on April 25th. Organized by the Gay and Lesbian Straight Education Network, the 12th annual event called on students to refrain from speaking for all or part of the school day to call attention to the way young gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender people feel silenced in society. It was held this year in memory of Lawrence King, an openly gay California 8th grader killed by a schoolmate in February. The 130 schools with participants in Georgia range from dozens of high schools in metro Atlanta to those in less gay-friendly locales spanning the state from Albany in South Georgia to Somerville in the North Georgia Mountains. And Swiftwaters Women's Space Campground in Dahlonega hosts the 4th Annual Women's Music in the Mountains Festival May 2nd through the 4th. The festival's performers include 3-5 Humans, Trina Mead, Diane Durrett, and Rhonda Cadle and the String Poets. Cadle continues the festival to carry on the efforts of Swiftwaters founders Joyce Tree and Dorothy Oswald, who are both now deceased, and its current owner, Pat Roberts, who was Tree's partner. And those are just some of the headlines from Southern Voice. Check us out online for more on these stories and others at www.sovo.com.
Okay. Thank you so much, Diana.
All right. Thank you.
See you next week.
All righty.
All right. Bye. Okay. And just a quick word on the mention of the Human Rights Campaign dinner on Saturday. There is also a secret meeting on Thursday night with the president of HRC and the transgender community to talk about I don't know what, okay, because I don't know what can be said to the five or so individuals that cannot be said to the entire community, or to at least the 1,000 transgender individuals and allies at the Southern Comfort conference in September of 07, when Joe, the president of HRC, told them that HRC would not support anything, any legislation that was not inclusive of gender identity. Okay, and this goes back. It just didn't start. I mean, they promised it in 2004, and they have gone back on their word. They refuse to take accountability for their actions, and I, for one, do not agree with their tactics of having secret meetings. Okay, and to top it off, refuse to have the press present at, and I had requested a few weeks back to be present at this meeting to cover it for this program, and that request was denied. Okay, and but there was, if you go up on, I'm going to give you a website, and if you go up on, let me just, the HTT, I can just say www.radiobyu.ning.com. You will find a forum there, and a discussion started on the subject, and some articles that can be read. There's links to the articles that will give you a sort of insight into what is going on with all of this politically, and at the cost and at the risk of putting the transgender community in danger by not being protected, because they claim that they can only get a piece of legislation that would only cover the G, the L, and G, the L, because I don't know if it would cover the B. But the transgender was dropped, as you heard from Diana in her report. Okay, but there'll be more discussion on this. You can bet on that. And right now we're going to our national and international news with Dion and Andre. Take it away.
For our news around the nation and around the world, this is the AP News Wrap. I'm Andre Holmes.
And I'm Dion Bates.
For the first time, a transgendered individual will deliver the sermon at the Unitarian Universalist Church in Newburyport, Connecticut. The church name is Pleasant Street Church, and the sermon is going to be Courage from Necessity, given by Barb Grieve, a lifelong member of the church who holds a master's degree in divinity.
A Long Island gay couple is charged with trespassing in marriage license protest. A middle-aged gay couple was charged with trespassing when they refused to leave the town clerk's office after being refused a marriage license.
Scientists discover protein may help halt the spread of HIV. The new approach targets a protein produced by human cells rather than HIV, and is therefore impervious to the virus's mutations. Scientists have discovered an HIV/AIDS treatment that may help sufferers avoid the problem of drug resistance.
The parents of murdered gay men plead for anti-bully law. Dozens of gays and lesbians converged on the Florida legislature to press lawmakers to enact a bill aimed at curbing bullying of LGBT students.
Roy Williams, president of the Greater Oklahoma City Chamber, confirmed that a consultant was troubled by Representative Kearns' homophobic comments that she made a couple months ago. The consultant told him that he could not recommend to any of his clients that they should consider Oklahoma City to relocate, because when you have the nation's premier relocation experts making those comments, The consultant said you should pay attention to that and not dismiss it.
In international news, Moscow gays to defy gay pride ban. Moscow gay leaders said Monday they intend to go ahead with gay pride celebrations next month, despite a ban by the city. There will be a gay pride parade in the city in May, no matter what city authorities may say, community leaders told the Interfax news agency. This is our constitutional right, and we intend to use it.
In India, for the first time in the country, a special database of transgenders would be created by the Tamil Nadu government to help deal with their problems and demands. And a policy note on social welfare, troubled by the treatment of these individuals, the Assembly on Monday said that the database would have comprehensive details on transgenders. It would be created with the help of a non-governmental organization.
Ontario is pressed to pull funding from faith-based groups. Ontario should consider pulling funding from a Christian group that has a history of human rights complaints and was recently ordered to compensate a worker who had to quit after revealing she was gay, the province's opposition parties say. The Human Rights Tribunal of Ontario recently ordered Kitchener, Ontario-based Christian Horizons to compensate former employee Connie Heintz and to end a prohibitive code of conduct contract for its 2,500 employees, the second time the tribunal has had to deal with a complaint against the evangelical organization. The tribunal's predecessor, the Human Rights Board of Inquiry, ruled in 1992 that two women fired by the organization for being in common law relationships should be paid $65,000.
The Australian government digs its heels over gay unions. For Australian gays, the more things change, the more they stay the same. Last year, when Labor's Kevin Rudd was swept to power, there were promises that the federal government would provide some recognition of gay and lesbian couples. Rudd has refused to consider repealing legislation that limits marriage to opposite-sex couples and is threatening to veto legislation in the Australian Capital Territory that would allow civil unions. The stumbling block for Rudd's government is a provision in the ACT bill that would allow gay and lesbian couples to have a civil union ceremony.
The government of Bahrain seeks to punish homosexual children. The government of Bahrain is taking action to stamp out homosexuals in the country. Homosexuality has been considered illegal in Bahrain since 1956, when as part of the British Empire, it was given the Indian Penal Code. Homosexuals can be given up to 10 years in prison, though this is rarely put into practice. In 2002, the government allegedly deported 2,000 gay Filipino workers for homosexual activity and prostitution. And that is it for this week's national and international headlines.
Okay, and We're going to just chat for a minute, a little bit more about HRC, okay? Because the behavior is hard to swallow. It's just very hard to swallow. And this was an article from Howie Klein that he wrote, and it was up on the HuffingtonPost.com. And he gives a little explanation of what HRC is and what they're doing currently. And amongst what they... First, let me... The Human Rights Campaign is an inside the Beltway advocacy group for gay people. I was very proud in 1997 when they gave me a Leadership Equality Award for my work at fostering equality in the workplace at Warner Brothers. I even wrote them into my will. But later on, he took them out of the will when some of their actions sort of kind of went against what he thought they stood for. But what opened my eyes to what HRC has become, an insider establishment, bunch of, and I can't say what he says on the air, but it starts with KISS, was their endorsement of a certain individual from Connecticut, okay? After I learned more about them, I smashed my award and removed them from my will. HRC is one of those inside the Beltway organization that has long ago lost sight of its original idealistic mandate. Instead of fighting for gay equality, they fight to win DC status games and to enhance the future career prospects of the top staffers. When it comes to electoral politics, you can almost always expect the worst from them. And they have done just that with ENDA, okay? Political expediency is the reason they give at the expense of human beings. And then politically, they just sent out their endorsements. They have endorsed 14 senators for the new elections coming up, but not the gay candidate in North Carolina. And again, I said before, if you go up on www.radiobayou.ning.com, you'll find those articles under the forum that explains all this also, and the games, the political games that are being played in that area. And, you know, and when you put it all together, it's all in that same framework of the status game. And they refuse to take accountability for the decision that they made, negating on the promises that they made, and will not apologize. And that's what needs to happen in order to heal the community at this point, especially the transgender community. But we're waiting on a guest, and they should be calling in a moment. So we'll be right back.
Welcome to another edition of Pride in Politics, where the personal is political. I'm Henri Holmes, and in this edition of Pride in Politics, we're talking to Herndon Davis, Director of Communications for the National Black Justice Coalition. Herndon, are you on the line?
I'm here. How are you doing?
Good. Talk up a little bit louder. I can barely hear you.
Okay, can you hear me now?
I can hear you just fine.
Okay.
Talk a little bit about the Power of Us convention that was just held over this past weekend. This actually marks the fifth year of service for NBJC.
Yeah, the Power of Us convention was held in Baltimore last week for 3 days, and it was a composition, or actually a combination of three different tracks combined into 1 week. Day one was Thursday, which really focused on Black LGBT health and wellness, whether it be physical, mental, or spiritual wellness, and also financial wellness. So we had a lot of financial literacy tracks going on. Day two focused on religion and the Black church and homophobia within the church. And day three focused on leadership and mobilization and building alliances to move forward.
How many people attended the event over the weekend?
Over the course of 3 days, we had about 350 people to go through the entire event.
And what would you say was the most impactful experience that happened over the weekend?
I think a lot of things happened in terms of people becoming more aware of the numerous issues that we are facing and many of the movements underfoot, so to speak, that are going to be opposing us coming forward in terms of later in the election year. From everything from politics and policies to religious groups that are really ramping up their efforts to oppose anything that's LGBT focused.
For many people that may not know, one of the missions of NBJC is it labeled itself as a civil rights organization dedicated to ending racism and homophobia and building a more inclusive movement for the rights and empowerment of Black gay Americans. How does the Power of Us help you implement that mission?
Well, we had a lot of people who represented us, not just Black LGBT, but Black people, period. So we had a lot of straight alliances there, straight allies there, as well as parents and young people and senior people. And so that Power of Us was really meant for a specific reason. And so this conference, actually this convention, brought together people from many different spectrums of our society, non-Black, non-gay, as well as Black LGBT, to strategize and to really talk about issues that are impacting our community as a whole.
Now, one of the questions, and some may criticize the group, as it seems to, this event fell on the same weekend that the Philadelphia Black Gay Pride happened, and I was going to say, will that happen again, or was just a mishap of scheduling?
Well, I think there was really a mix up in scheduling, but I would think that our Black LGBT community is big enough and robust enough and mature enough to patronize one, two, or three events on the same weekend. This time around, it was just a mishap, but I do believe that we are robust enough to attend multiple events and still have a strong showing.
And to that end, what does specifically NBJC do to work with local grassroots LGBT of color organizations?
Since our inception, we've partnered with numerous organizations. We support many of the Black gay prides across the country, whether it be financially or actually sponsoring events or both during that time frame. We also have other groups that we've actually sponsored in terms of getting them to events across the country, including this past weekend to our event. So we really work to make sure that everyone in the middle states are covered, not just both coasts.
One of the things, and this year you combined them, but you built, the organization built a formidable reputation working a lot in with respect to the Black churches and the church summit, that the first one was held here in Atlanta. How effective has that summit been in helping to combat what many consider to be homophobia in the Black church?
I've been instrumental in the work that we do. We're not a religious organization. We're a civil rights organization, but we do recognize that religion is very pervasive in the black community. And in the years that we've been existing, we've partnered with institutions that are religious-based to build alliances. And at one time, no one would ever speak to us. And now we've got people who were in the movable middle, ministers who weren't necessarily gay-bashing but still weren't embracing, to become more embracing. We've got on board everyone from Dr. Michael Eric Dyson to Bishop Carlton Pearson to other individuals who have come closer to inclusiveness since they've been associated with us. So I think that that's a huge accomplishment based on our tenacity to get through and inside of the traditional black church infrastructure.
Does the group do political endorsements?
We have a separate entity called MBJC Action Fund that is responsible for all of our political organizing, including raising money for politicians, black LGBT politicians, training them, as well as endorsing them. And we have endorsed candidates, not MBJC, but MBJC Action Fund. And we do endorse that entity will endorse candidates.
What can people look for in the future from NBJC?
Well, going forward, we're going to continue to expand what I just mentioned to you, the NBJC Action Fund. We're also actually looking to expand our own infrastructure as well. We just launched with Click Magazine a Power of Us 16-page spread, and in this month's issue, we have 16 pages where we have a photographic essay of black LGBT as well as straight individuals who are their family members, supporting them, posing, people from across the country, really showing the power of us. And that is in this month's issue of Click Magazine and will be in other publications, gay and non-gay and black and non-black, across the country going forward. So that's our biggest public service campaign we've had to date.
Can you talk a little bit more about that? Who are some of the personalities and individuals featured, and why are they significant?
Oh, wow. We have about 25 people featured. Let's see. We've got Paris Barkley. He's a film producer, well-known film producer and television director. We've got Maurice Jamal, Phil Wilson, lots of clergy, as well as some an educator out of Arkansas who used to live in Atlanta, by the way, Alicia Banks. We've got a straight mother who's 85 years old who has two gay children. We've got a gay brother and a straight brother posing together, along with a playwright by the name of Cheryl Clark of New Jersey and several reality TV stars who are also in it as well. So we really reached outside of the box to get grassroots individuals, to get celebrities as well as clergy and everyday people, unknown, so to speak, in our community, to really pose both gay and non-gay.
And the point of this particular campaign is to, I know you talked about the power of us and showing that, but specifically, what is it designed to do?
It's designed to do two things. One is to educate, because there still to this day there are people who don't recognize that black LGBT really exists in broad numbers and vibrant, productive numbers. And then two is really meant to show that there is power in our numbers, the strength and power. And we exist in all levels of leadership in all areas of society. So if a 13-year-old child in Mississippi and a 35-year-old closeted man in Oregon sees the spread and reads about these people and about the work that we do, they will feel more empowered to not only just come out, but to become more active in their individual communities.
Well, I thank you so much for joining us. In our remaining seconds, is there any additional comments that you have?
Well, I just encourage all of you, your listeners to come join NBJC, join our listserv, and our website is www.nbjc.org.
Well, thank you so much, Hernan. I do just want to note that you did one of your first radio interviews here on WRFG with our producer and show creator, Betty Couvetier.
Exactly. It was, I think, December 30th or 31st, New Year's Eve, back in 2000. Oh, Lord.
That was, because it was right before your book coming out in April of 2004. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So it's always great to have you on, and we thank you so much. And to the listeners, thank you for tuning in to Pride and Politics, a weekly segment on WRFG's Alternative Perspectives, where we look at the small and extraordinary ways individual people are making social change happen in their communities. Thank you.
Thank you, Harden.
Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye. Okay, thank you so much, Andre. That was good. Appreciate that.
And you're welcome.
All righty. And I'll go back to a little. are back. And we're going to chit-chat because we're waiting on a phone call from Women Healing Women. And once that comes in, we'll break for that. In the meantime, LaCara Foster is in the house.
Hey there.
Dion Bates.
Hello.
And Andre Holmes. And
back at you.
All right. And we're going to talk a little bit, what's coming up with you, LaCara, at school?
Oh, at school.
Your job.
For those of you all don't know, I'm a graduation coach at Avondale High School, and I'm very proud. Our senior class is getting ready to graduate on May 23rd, and they're having their honors night this week. So we're going to honor a lot of them for their academic achievements. It's a lot of awards that are going to go out. So very excited. Going to go and just cheer them on. And,
yeah, that's really nice.
Wish them luck. Yeah. They've worked really, really hard this year. And so we're looking to make AYP. So let's hope so.
AYP?
Annual Yearly Progression under the No Child Left Behind.
Oh, really? Okay.
That's a whole nother story.
That's a whole nother story.
However, but wow. As a graduation coach, what exactly is it that you do in terms of helping your kids at Avondale?
It's sort of like guidance counseling, except I have a more concentrated caseload that the state identifies as the more at-risk students. Mm-hmm. So they, you know, a girl may have a baby, or it may be a student that has to work to supplement the income of the family. And so it may be a kid who didn't do well on their CRCT in middle school. And so mm-hmm. there's a whole number of factors that the state looks at. And what I do with those kids is I take them, it's about 100 of them, and I pay very close attention to them, and I do individual plans with them. And I'm their biggest cheerleader and their advocate at the school. And, you know, if parents need something, then they know that they can call me. If the kid needs something, they know that they can call me. And I'll say that when I started, our graduation rate at our school was 54%. Mm-hmm. And the year I became the graduation coach at the school, the graduation rate went from 54% to 74%.
Wow.
Yeah. Okay. So we're looking at doing even better numbers this year.
This year.
Yeah.
Well, how
That's
much,
great.
You know, one of the things that really interests me, not really interests me, but really intrigues me, is how a senior mm-hmm. could have gone through 4 years of school with the four and have a 4.0 GPA mm-hmm. and be offered scholarships to college only to not be able to graduate because of this high school test.
Mm.
How much of your coaching, because I'm assuming you work mostly with the seniors?
Mostly with the seniors, yeah.
How much of your coaching is geared towards making sure that your seniors on graduation day are able to take that walk and not have to worry about not being able to go on to college?
Right. Actually, Dion, my entire job, that is what my job rests on, because the kids, they won't get a diploma. They will get a certificate of performance if they can't pass that test.
Really?
And that was the main thing, that 54% is what was really keeping us, you know, held back. But mm-hmm. Now, you know, we make sure that the kids have tutorials. Mm-hmm. They have pullouts. We call them pullouts, and it's kind of like concentrated, where for 2 weeks, all the kids do is, instead of going to their regular classes, mm-hmm. they go to, you know, remediation. Mm-hmm. So we put a lot of things in place for the kids. This year was wonderful. We had a pep rally for them. I was the MC of the pep rally. The DJ came in. Mm-hmm. We got them excited. We served them breakfast every morning before the test. Mm-hmm. And right now, I think we're looking at about the scores came back, and about 69% of them passed all parts of the test.
Wow, that's excellent.
Yeah.
That is excellent.
So we've done some amazing things. So we're
you are certainly an asset to your school, and it sounds like you're doing a really great job.
And yeah, the graduation coaches, they're just about in every school in Georgia, and it was something that came down from the governor, and it's what he said he wanted, and I think that we've made a great difference here.
Beautiful.
So, yeah.
So, Andre.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
I just want to say one thing, that it's just nice to know that the children, so many times we don't see the children being uplifted, and we only hear about the children that are doing wrong things and bad things. So it's nice that the people over at Avondale and the students really everywhere, there are always more students doing the right thing than there are doing the wrong thing. And I don't think we as media professionals bring that out enough.
Yeah, and we don't really, and we don't spend enough time here talking amongst ourselves about what we do out there. You know, which is, you know, remarkable work.
Thank you.
Okay, right now we have Marissa Penderman on the line. Hi, Marissa.
Hello.
Okay, we got Dion, you have a short bio on her?
Yes, I do. What's up, Reverend?
Hello, how are you?
I'm well. This is the Reverend Marissa Penderman, who is an ordained reverend in the Unity Fellowship Church Movement and currently serves as assistant pastor at Unity Fellowship Church. Besides holding a law degree from University of Florida, Reverend Penderman is also an organizational and resource development professional, community builder, master trainer, and group facilitator. Reverend Penderman is owner and principal consultant of Connections Consulting, a consulting firm that assists nonprofit community organizations and faith-based organizations to start, expand, and reorganize. In addition to working with Women Healing Women, Reverend Penderman has worked with and for several organizations engaged in a broad range of interconnected social justice issues. And I am very proud to say that I have had the honor of working with Reverend Penderman with the Atlanta Faith Interfaith Alliance, and it is just a pleasure to know you, and welcome to Alternative Perspectives.
Thank you so much.
And ditto on that. I've known the Reverend for a few years now, and yes, wonderful work you're doing out there. And I thank you for taking time to call us and letting us know what Women Healing Women is up to out there.
Okay. Women Healing Women is an organization that works with and for and on behalf of women who are survivors of sexual assault and domestic violence. We do that in terms of providing support, education, and counseling. And the organization itself is really just dedicated to ending violence globally for women and for children.
Okay. And when did Women Healing Women start? Imani Evans is the executive director.
That's correct.
And just to let the folks know why she's not here is that she had a speaking engagement at Spelman. So her vice president, the Reverend, said it was okay for her to come in her place or call us in her place.
That's correct.
And I appreciate that.
You're welcome. Imani started Women Healing Women in 2005, really out of her own need to have a group that would look at sexual assault and violence and the effects of it long after the initial trauma. Most organizations that look at sexual violence or violence in general, like rape crisis centers and other centers of that nature, look at it in terms of what happens immediately after the trauma happens. But Women Healing Women specifically focuses on helping women who have been survivors of violence, and particularly sexual violence, far beyond the actual event itself. And so the women that we see are at least 6 months out from the event, and in many cases they are 5 years or more out from the event, but it's still impacting their lives. And so this organization really helps women move beyond just having survived the act to really thriving in their lives.
Let me put on my mic here. Recently, Women Healing Women, they have their own office now?
Yes. The office of Women Healing Women is, again, run by Imani, and we don't have the opportunity for people to come in yet, but she is working on it full time. We've expanded our board of directors. We have several monthly support groups meetings. In fact, one of our first support group meetings started at our church, Unity Fellowship Church. It continues to meet there on the second Sunday of the month, and that group meeting is open to any and all women who are survivors of violence. We have a lesbian-specific group that meets, and that group meets at the Lesbian Health Initiative. And I believe we're in transition in terms of what day that group meets. And we are also looking to expand to other groups in other parts of the city. The idea is to not ever have any support group grow beyond the number of around eight, so that the group remains intimate and individuals can really get their needs met. But you can visit our website at www.surviving2thriving.org.
Reverend Penderman, you mentioned something very interesting. You mentioned the support group that is more focused on lesbians who are survivors of abuse. And I just want to say I think that's really great. One of the largest concerns about the lesbian community is that we don't talk about domestic violence in the lesbian community or much in the gay community either. And I'm just wondering, with the start of that particular support group, have you seen, can you talk a little bit about maybe the ratio between the victims who come in for support groups who are lesbians versus those who come in who are heterosexual? And are you finding that the community or women in the community who, more so lesbians in the community, are taking advantage of that support group because there's such a kind of a hush-hush type of atmosphere around domestic violence in the gay and lesbian community?
Yes, thank you, Deanne, for asking that. I'm finding that the people who are attending both the general support group and the support group for primarily lesbians are, there's probably about 70% of them are identifying as lesbian and or bisexual. Mm-hmm. However, the support group that is specifically for lesbians has not been as consistently well attended as the general group. And I do find that that those of us who identify as non-heterosexual women have a more difficult time sort of coming to the group, particularly to talk about incidents of sexual violence. In fact, we expanded our mission to include violence in general because what we realized was that many of the women who have experienced sexual violence come with a history of domestic abuse as well, but have an easier time, have less shame, if you will, attached to coming to saying someone hit me with their fist than they will have telling us that they've been sexually assaulted. And that sort of usually happens after they've come and built relationship. And so we did find that once we started meeting, we were getting lots of mail, either snail mail or email around the issue, but people weren't putting a face to it until we expanded the mission to include violence outside of sexual violence.
Violence outside of okay, so that would just be physical violence.
Yeah, it'd be physical violence. People have had a real have had a much easier time sort of introducing themselves as someone who is a victim of battering than they have of sexual assault.
And are we talking about same sex violence or heterosexual? I mean,
we're talking about both. A lot of the times, it's happening within the same sex attracted community. Sometimes it's violence against that community by heterosexual people. It is definitely both.
Wow. But you have heterosexual women who are coming from a heterosexual relationship?
Yes, we have both heterosexual women who come from heterosexual relationships.
Okay. And same sex.
That's correct.
Relationships.
That's correct. Hmm. And there really isn't, there really isn't any difference in terms of how that violence is showing up later on in their lives and in the way that they build relationships or don't build relationships, or even in the way that they show up in terms of employment or in family issues. It tends to affect us the same.
Hmm. And, you know, I think that, you mentioned something really interesting with regards to the different types of violence. And I'm sure one of the educational components of the groups for these women is helping them to identify what abuse looks like.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think a lot of times people don't necessarily understand that usually abuse starts long before someone strikes you.
Right.
You know, for someone who may be listening right now, who may be going through something similar or who may know of someone who's going through something similar, can you talk a little bit about some of the signs that may be present prior to being hit? Or prior, you know, or if you're in, if you are in a relationship with someone prior to even being raped, can you talk a little bit about some of the warning signs that might be helpful to some of our listeners?
Absolutely. One of the things that I want to say that I don't think it's said enough is that violence, battering, sexual assault is a crime that has to do with power and control.
Mm-hmm.
And has really very little to do with sex. Sex just becomes the weapon.
Right.
And so one of the things that people need to be very mindful of is finding themselves in relationships where they gradually but consistently are losing control over themselves. Mm-hmm. And over their ability to make decisions about themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Because typically, and not always, there are always exceptions to every rule, but typically people who batter are able to do that because they have slowly but consistently chipped away at a person's self-esteem, at a person's sense of self-worth. They start telling them what to wear or how to look, or just becoming possessive around how much time they spend outside of their presence, and those kinds of things. And one of the ways that this is showing up for us, in addition to with women who are older women, is it showing up a lot in teenage relationships.
Mm-hmm.
In this country, one out of three teen relationships has some component of sexual violence and or rape that has been a part of that relationship. And in terms of the LGBTQ community, we're seeing that a lot of our young women who identify as aggressive, as butch, or as stud, are doing that sometimes because in their minds it puts them in a position of being the dominant one, of being the one in control. And so we're seeing it even in those relationships as well. And so the education piece really is around teaching all of us to do a better job at honoring femininity, because also we know that one in six boys will be raped in this country by the time that they're 18. And so it's not just a women's problem.
Right.
And so we need to do a better job at educating our boys and our girls around honoring femininity wherever it shows up, whether it shows up in males or in females, that part of us is a sacred part. And we need to be able to, as women, also embrace that. Because I think a lot of times a person who is particularly feminine, particularly seen as traditionally woman, finds themselves in that position because they are also taught that they are the weaker, that they need to be dependent, that they have to use their sort of feminine wiles, if you will, and not their intellect. And so the education is a broad piece that we need to do.
Any other questions from the production team?
This is Lakar, and I think I really wanted to hear more about the signs, especially if there are young ladies that are listening. Like, if you could speak specifically to what are some of the signs that they should be careful of in terms of isolation,
yes,
or jealousy.
I do think, particularly younger people, not being allowed to or being asked not to go out with your friends, not being allowed to or being asked not to connect with your families, and many of the people who find themselves in battering relationships are already people who may not be that connected to family members or may not have a broad support system. Again, just not being able to make decisions for yourself, even down to the things that you like to do. If you like to bowl and you find your partner steering you away from bowling, for example, or just trying to make all of your interests their interest. If you are somehow losing your sense of self, you're losing your own identity. If you like to wear your hair down and they're insisting that you put your hair up, it seems like a little thing,
right,
but those are the kinds of things that lead to controlling. Anytime you find yourself not being able to just show up as you would normally show up, that is an opportunity to have a conversation about control and being yourself. And if you find that you can't have that conversation without it being explosive or volatile, then that's a huge red flag.
Okay, thank you. Reverend, we're running out of time, and
okay,
it always happens when we have some interesting subject matter, and time just flies by.
Yes, it does.
Yeah, and I hope we can do this again in the near future. It's an interesting subject and one that we need to talk more about.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having us.
Okay. Again, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Good night.
Good night.
All right. Okay. And with that, it is just about time for the end of another show. So I will say good night. Buenas noches.
A primazia que se livre pra cantar. Este não é samba pra comício, nem tão pouco samba social.
You're listening to WRFG Atlanta, 89.3 FM, your station for progressive information. WRFG provides a voice for those who have been traditionally denied access to broadcast media through the involvement of a broad base of community elements to guarantee that access. In the